Options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. Individuals should not enter into options transactions until they have read and understood the risk disclosure document, characteristics and risks of standardized options. Available by calling 1-888-OPTIONS or by visiting optionseducation.org. None of the information in this presentation should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security or to provide investment advice. This is part 5 of the Options Industry Council's 7-part Options Fundamentals podcast series.
Let's talk about options pricing. So we've done all these strategies. We've looked at premiums. We said we paid this, we paid that, we in the money, out of the money. Where did that number come from? And what does it mean to me? What happens? This is now the realistic expectations. Now we're going to take and say, okay, if we're right in our forecast, what can we expect this option to do for us? What's it going to do? So we need to understand these terms and how they apply to the option pricing. Option prices don't change like stock prices in most cases. That's our first realization. And the reason for that is called the options delta. And it's a measure of the option's expected sensitivity to changes in the stock price. And again, assuming everything else is the same. What this really means is how much is the option going to move in relation to how much the underlying stock moves. And the delta factor is based on, okay, if the underlying, XYZ or whatever it may be, moves a point, how much is the option premium going to move relative to that point move in the underlying stock? And the answer is the classic, it depends. Different options will have these different deltas that tell you how much it's going to move. Think about back to our slide, intrinsic value. A deep in the money, an in the money option having substantial intrinsic value is essentially a stock surrogate, meaning that because of intrinsic value, whatever happens in the stock has to happen in the option. And that's deep in the money. So deep in the money, you're going to have a delta of 100 or 100%. So for a dollar move in that underlying security, that option premium is going to move because it's intrinsic value. It has to. Okay? Take the opposite side of the spectrum, and we have the out of the money, far out of the money, and the stock moves a point, and the option's far out of the money, nobody cares. And the option premium's not going to react to it, at least not very much. So you've got a delta for out of the money, well, let's do this, out of the money over on this side, in the money here, one or zero here, one here. Let's just take these and put them together in the middle. What do you think the at the money is based on that? Fundamentally, the at-the-money option has a 50 delta, meaning that if the stock moves 1 point, that option premium will move half a point. It's a relative term. It could be a little higher or a little lower, but it's a good gauge to use. That's one of the things that happens with people new to options getting frustrated with some things, saying, my stock moved, my options didn't. And that's because of this delta factor. It's not going to be, unless it gets deep in the money, it's not going to be a one-for-one deal. Let's talk about time decay or the other. This is our first Greek term was delta. Our second one is time decay, which is really theta, which is time decay. Option prices do not decrease at the same rate that time passes to expiration. This factor for a long option position, where most of us are going to be most of the time, is public enemy number one. Remember, we have that three-month window? We have that three-month window. So we have that period of time that we purchased our option for, or whatever it may be. And as that option gets closer and closer to expiration, if nothing happened, stock stayed the same, nothing else happened with it, that option premium would erode, would get smaller and smaller and smaller as time got to expiration. Why? Because it's going to revert to either at expiration intrinsic value or zero. It's going to be in the money or it's not. And a not is zero. But that time decay that occurs as it moves starts slow, and as you get closer to expiration, it accelerates. So let's consider this. Days to expiration is 60, the 50 calls at 3. If we reduce the days to expiration to 30, The 50 call would go from where to where? It would go from that 3 to 2. This chart probably illustrates it the best. It just shows you this is where the ski slope gets really down out to that 0. So this number at the end will be intrinsic value or 0. It will be worthless. And that's the time to expiration. So the further out you go, the less impact time decay will have. But once you start to get in here, and it's usually around the 30-day number that it starts to have that impact. This is why you manage the position. This is why you look at it at 30 days out and say, are we meeting our objectives in the pricing of the underlying? If that's the case, then we're okay. If we're not meeting where we'd like to be, we have to be aware that time decay is going to start to work heavily against us and we're going to lose premium. Let's reverse it. Let's think about we're a seller. What do you like about time decay now? Now all of a sudden for the seller, this is happy time. This is the great stuff. Why? Because I sold an option. What did I do with an option when I sold it? I took in premium. I got dollars, put them right in my pocket, said, thank you very much, I have these dollars in my pocket, and boy, do I hope this option expires worthless. So when we get in here, it's our friend on the sell side. We want to go away, go to zero, and then I get to keep the money. So for long options, public enemy number one, for short options, we enjoy time decay. We have all 3 month options, calls and puts, different strike prices, and we see a whole bunch of different premiums. What determines all these prices? The word insurance, options as insurance. So in this case, we're looking for options as an insurance policy. And when you think of a put option, what do you have? You have the right to sell the underlying security at a specific price, specific time, all that stuff. So we can fix the selling price, a price that we wish to sell an underlying security, by buying a put option on that security. So the concept here is, I have a stock in my portfolio. I've been successful with it. It's made some money for me. It's up. I don't see any real reason to sell this stock. Nobody in the board of directors has been put in jail recently. Earnings have been good, etc., whatever the case may be. However, I have some concerns about the market in general. 80% of the risk in the stock is what? The market itself. So I have concerns about the market. Good stock, I don't want to sell it, but market gets hammered, my good stock will probably get hammered along with it. Maybe not as big a hit as it would because it's a good stock, but it's still going to come down, and I really don't want to give back that profit, or at least all of it. Buy an insurance policy on it. Set a selling price. Buy a put option. Stock's at 50, we bought it, whatever it may be, 35. Let's buy a 45 put. I have the right to sell it at 45 for the next 3 months. For that, I pay a premium. That's just like my term insurance premium. The 5-point difference between 50 and 45 is the deductible. And I have an insurance policy. I have peace of mind that I can sell at 45 less the premium, obviously, but I know I can sell it. So if the market gets hit, the stock gets hammered and goes down, I can get out and I can still maintain some of the profit that I've had on the stock. The key here is I don't have to. Remember, I've got the right but not the obligation to do it. So I can still watch the market. I've got a time window I'm working with. Market may turn around, come back, stabilize, so I don't have to sell out this stock because I like it. So you've got those options, if you will, involved in the trade. So that's insurance, options as insurance. Another way you might want to look at it with a put option is when you get long a stock position, buy a put on it right away. Just buy a put simultaneously with going long a stock in your portfolio. What have you done there? You've prevented, you've basically kept yourself from getting caught in a market dislocation. Market all of a sudden has a really bad couple of days. You went out and bought this stock and now all of a sudden you've got it down. Well, you've got the put that will allow you to exit with a minimal loss. Just a thought. That's kind of the strategy you should look at with options. Last one is let's talk about using call options as insurance. We have a lot of cash in our portfolio. We're out of the market. We're watching and waiting. I don't know about you, but I haven't got a good track record of picking tops and bottoms. So when do I get in? How do I get in? When the market makes its turn. I want to be there. Well, sure enough, with my case, usually the case, the market makes a turn and then I'm chasing stocks as they run up on it, on me. Think about using a call option this way. I've got 5 stocks or 6 stocks, whatever the case may be, that I've analyzed that I think will be market leaders when the market turns. And I think the market probably has a good chance to turn within the next 3 months. Buy a portfolio of call options on those 5 or 6 stocks. Limited risk, predefined upfront, allows you to set an entry point. Market turns, stocks start to go up, you know where you can get in. You don't have to, you can just ride the calls. If 3 out of the 5 do well, you've got 3 chances to get in on those. The other 2, you know what your risk is up front. So the potential to use the call option as a cash insurance, if you will, to allow you to enter the market is there as well. So there's an infinite variety of different ways to employ these options across the board to do different things. Let's take the insurance analogy and use it somewhat differently. We have this scenario. Driver A, driver B, everything's the same, except that we see the premium they pay on the insurance is significantly different. B is a riskier driver. So now let's talk about options pricing and insurance. Here we have same basic scenario, stock A, stock B, and we see that the premium for these options, and everything is the same, it's going to cost you $575 for B, and stock A, it's only going to cost you $300. What's just told you? It's told you that the market considers stock B riskier, meaning that it is more volatile, meaning that it's probably got a chance to move in a wider range than stock A. And you're going to pay a premium because of that volatility. At volatility in the option. So that's the analogy of the insurance thing. We use the insurance as a policy with it, and then we go around and turn and say, let's use it as a name for risk. Let's use it to talk about risk in a position. Options pricing models. You can go, and there's a way you can develop and get a theoretical, and I emphasize the word theoretical, value on an option by taking a formula, and I think that you may have gotten an options investigator CD. But there's a lot of software out there that you can do, and you can come up with this theoretical value by putting these inputs. What's the stock price? I know that. What's the strike price of my option? I got that down. I know how much time's left for expiration on the option. I know the interest rate level plus any dividends or less dividends that might be involved in the stock. Here's the kicker. What's the volatility of the underlying? But we put those in there, and out of that comes this magical, here's a call and put premium. Based on these values, here's what it theoretically should be. Make no mistake. Option premiums are just like any other security out there, or any other commodity, if you will. They are subject to the laws of supply and demand. So if you have more demand than you have supply, your price of the option premium will go up, and they might not always be what the theoretical is. So don't get caught up saying, hey, well, the theoretical value is $2 and it's selling for $210, I'm going to sell it because it's overpriced. Be careful about that. There may be another reason why that it's $210, and that may be because there's demand. But at least it gives you a roadmap. It gives you something to work with. Now, the kicker here is this, obviously, this number here. Well, where do I get the volatility? Well, the interesting part to that is that the market will give you a volatility called implied. There's 2 types of volatilities normally we look at. Historical, how volatile has it been in the past? And we look at a time frame. How volatile has it been over the last 60 days, 90 days, whatever it may be. And we can use that number in there for it. My only caution is the classic past volatility is no guarantee of future volatility. The other way to do it is called implied volatility. The market will tell you what it thinks how volatile the underlying is. So we take that formula and we replace volatility with the option premium and solve for volatility. It's going to be a percent move over a year considered. It's going to come out as a percent number. And that'll give you a number. This is what the market is telling me based on this option premium at how volatile they think this underlying really is. So that's, again, you'll hear the term implied volatility.
Ready to learn more? Next in the series is Options Fundamentals Part 6. You can download Options Fundamentals Part 6 and other OIC podcasts free at www.optionseducation.org. If this or any other OIC podcast leaves you with any unanswered options questions, please call the Options Industry Council at 1-888-OPTIONS.